Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster, and this episode on Thursday, April 16th, 2026, will feature articles that appeared in the Arizona Mirror over the past week. Since this program airs only once a week, some of the articles may be a bit dated, and breaking stories may be added toward the end. The Arizona Mirror is an independent publication which sources stories from all over the state and the nation. We will focus primarily on stories that impact people in Arizona. In this week's episode, these are some of the stories we'll be reading. Phoenix tells AG Mays its ban on ice staging areas doesn't violate state law. Hobbs to Republicans, show me your budget or every bill you send me is dead. Maricopa County Recorder Justin Heap discussed election records, litigation with feds. Appallingly short of basic human dignity, Democrats demand answers about Mesa ICE facility. And let's get started. Our first story, Phoenix tells AG Mays its ban on ICE staging areas doesn't violate state law. By Jim Small, April 14, 2026. The city of Phoenix says it is not violating a state law barring local governments from blocking the enforcement of federal immigration law, as Republican state lawmaker insists. Because it has constitutional protections as a charter city, and the managing of municipal property is a matter of purely local concern, the city said its policy banning federal agents from using city property to plan or carry out immigration raids isn't overridden by a state law. In light of that, City Attorney Julie Craig wrote in response to a complaint filed earlier this month by a Republican state legislator, Attorney General Chris Mays should conclude the city isn't violating state law. But even if the city's charter doesn't exempt it from a state law that prohibits counties, cities, and towns from limiting or restricting the enforcement of federal immigration laws to, quote, less than the full extent permitted by federal law, Craig argued that Phoenix policy doesn't do anything to restrict enforcement of federal immigration law. Instead, it simply regulates any external law enforcement agency's use of city property for civil law enforcement staging and operational purposes, she wrote. There is an important distinction between restricting the enforcement of immigration laws and managing the use of municipal property. At issue is Phoenix Community Transparency Initiative, which forbids federal agents from staging or basing operations on city property, such as parks or libraries, without first obtaining express permission from the city manager or police chief. There are exceptions to that rule. The city can't prevent federal authorities from pursuing fleeing suspects onto city property, bar them from gathering on public streets, ignore judicial warrants, or stop them from setting up camp at Phoenix Municipal Court or Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport, which is subject to federal regulations. But State Representative Quan Nguyen, a Republican from Prescott, filed a complaint arguing that Phoenix is violating state law by restricting access to the property. Legislators can force the Attorney General to investigate whether policies adopted by counties and municipalities violate state law. If the AG sides with lawmaker, then the local government could be stripped of state funding. In his complaint, Nguyen claims that Phoenix officials are infringing on the ability of federal agents to enforce the law by narrowing their access to areas that may be strategically located and unlawfully elevating local leaders above federal authorities. This policy conditions federal and intergovernmental law enforcement activity on local approval, effectively placing the city manager in a gatekeeping role over manner, timing, and feasibility of enforcement operations, Wehen wrote. But Craig said there's nothing in the law that Wehen cites requiring Phoenix or any other city to facilitate immigration enforcement or to provide resources, logistical support, or unfettered access to city property. No federal law entitles federal agents to use municipal property as a staging area, processing location, or operations base for civil law enforcement purposes. Similarly, no federal law requires cities to make their properties available to federal agents to enforce federal immigration laws, she wrote. And federal courts have held that there is a clear difference between impermissibly obstructing federal immigration enforcement and not proactively providing resources to aid that enforcement, Craig wrote. On top of that, the city attorney argued that Phoenix policy exemplifies the U.S. Constitution's federalism and is the kind of local property management decision the federal structure of our government is designed to protect. It neither imposes obligations, penalties, or regulatory burdens on federal agencies or personnel, nor dictates how federal law enforcement agencies may otherwise conduct enforcement operations. It does not interfere with or control the operations of the federal government, Craig wrote, quoting a 2022 U.S. Supreme Court ruling. And that concludes this first story. Phoenix tells AG Mays its ban on ICE staging areas doesn't violate state law. Our second story is also about law and government news. Hobbs to Republicans, show me your budget or every bill you send me is dead. Republican leaders called the move political theater and an unserious approach to governing as the June 30th budget deadline looms. By Caitlin Sievers, April 13, 2026. Governor Katie Hobbs says she won't sign any more bills until Arizona's Republican legislative leaders reveal their budget plan. The Democratic governor paused budget negotiations 3 weeks ago after she said that Republicans who control the Arizona House of Representatives and the Arizona Senate refused to negotiate on Proposition 123, a school funding measure that expired last year. In response, Republicans said that Hobbs' proposed budget was unserious and accused her of, quote, throwing a tantrum. At the time, Hobbs said her office would resume negotiations if the GOP leaders publicly released their own budget plan. Weeks later, they haven't done so, and Hobbs is increasing the pressure. I know we can get big things done when we work together, but that isn't possible when one side refuses to show us their plans, Hobbs said Monday in a statement. Hobbs revealed her own budget plan in January, which Republicans said was, quote, based on fantasy revenue. Passing a budget by the June 30th deadline is the Arizona legislature's only statutory duty each year. Negotiations are always difficult since the budget requires approval from both Republican-led chambers of the legislature as well as the Democratic governor, whose priorities often do not align. Last year, the budget fight led to numerous late-night sessions, partly because of Republican infighting, with the budget finally passed and signed on June 27th. The dynamics of the negotiations this year are even more difficult because of cuts from the federal government that decrease available resources and election year politics that are especially amplified because Hobbs is seeking re-election in November. In her statement, Hobbs said the Republican leaders were focused on tax cuts for billionaires and taking away food and medical assistance for families who need it, instead of producing a balanced budget. Senate President Warren Peterson placed the blame for the budget negotiation breakdown on Hobbs. The governor's blanket veto threat is an unserious approach to governing and puts politics ahead of progress, he he said in a statement to the Arizona Mirror. In response, the Senate will focus on advancing amended bills that require final action while we continue working daily to reach a balanced budget. We're ready to negotiate and get this done. Arizona House Speaker Steve Montenegro called Hobbs' announcement political theater. Governor Hobbs quit the budget talks more than 3 weeks ago after it became clear her numbers did not add up, and now she is trying to distract from that failure with a bill signing freeze, he said in a statement to the Mirror. At the center of Hobbs' exit from negotiations was Republicans' refusal to negotiate putting a renewal of Prop 123, which expired last year, to voters. Arizona voters narrowly favored Prop 123 in 2016, a vital source of K-12 school funding that made up for the state's failure to increase funding for public education to keep up with inflation. Its passage settled a lawsuit filed by public schools. The $300 million in funding came from an increase in the percentage taken from the state's land trust to fund public schools, raising the distribution rate from 2.5% to 6.9%. The rate reverted back to the lower threshold in June. Republicans have tried for the past few years to create a plan to renew or revive Prop 123, but none of those efforts gained traction. And while they agreed to use the state's general fund to backfill the lost $300 million in education funding last year, there's no guarantee they'll continue to do so. When Hobbs walked away from budget negotiations 3 weeks ago, gubernatorial spokesman Kristen Slater blamed Republicans' refusal to negotiate a Prop 123 revival on Senator Jake Hoffman, a Queen Creek Republican and head of the far-right Arizona Freedom Caucus. Rumors at the Capitol suggest that some Republicans may be tempted to cut a deal with Hobbs on Prop 123, Hoffman wrote in a March 12 post on the social media site X. The only winner in a political drug deal like this is Hobbs. If Republicans decide to surrender on 123, they will be effectively underwriting the Hobbs re-election campaign. On Monday, Hobbs criticized Republicans for their failure to publicly release their own budget proposal after they promised to create their own balanced budget, quote, in the next several weeks, in a March 19th statement. In the same statement, GOP leaders claimed they had already shown Hobbs' budget team a balanced budget that conformed the Arizona tax code with changes at the federal level. GOP lawmakers want to fully conform to the federal adjustments, changes that would result in tax cuts totaling an estimated $441 million this year. Hobbs wants to partially conform to the new federal tax codes, which would result in a smaller reduction in state income tax revenues. The two sides have already been fighting over this issue for months, with Hobbs vetoing their proposals to align the state's tax codes with federal tax law changes created by President Donald Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill. Republicans have claimed that Hobbs' own budget proposal is unbalanced because it relies on funding sources that might not materialize. That includes Prop 123 funding that would depend on approval from voters in November and a $760 million reimbursement from the federal government for border security-related expenditures made by the state after January 20, 2021. Both Hobbs and Republican legislative leaders have requested more than $700 million from the state Border Security Reinforcement Fund, created by the One Big Beautiful Bill. But there's no guarantee Arizona will receive that money, as the state must compete for funds with other border states, like Texas, which has asked for more than $11 billion in reimbursement from the $13 billion fund. Arizona needs a balanced budget built on honest numbers, not press stunts and invented revenue, Montenegro said in the statement. House Republicans are at the Capitol doing the work and ready to govern. The governor can end her sideshow anytime by coming back to the table, doing her job, and dealing with reality. Hobbs said Republicans were keeping their own plan under wraps so they could avoid the public scrutiny, and promised that until they reveal it, all of their bills will be dead on arrival. Arizonans deserve more than these political games, she said. They deserve a budget that cuts taxes for the middle class, funds our public schools, and lowers costs for everyday Arizonans. I'm ready to negotiate. My door is open. The legislative majority needs to put forward their budget proposal and then join me at the negotiating table so we can pass a bipartisan, balanced budget just like we've done the past 3 years. Peterson said in his statement that the Senate will, quote, respond accordingly to the governor's threat. We're not going to pretend business as usual can continue under a veto threat, he said. Hobbs said she would make two exceptions to the veto moratorium for bills that would provide death benefits to first responders and would give $4.8 million to the Arizona Department of Public Safety to support state troopers and first responders. In recent years, Arizona governors have resorted to bill signing moratoriums as a way to strong-arm Republican legislators to compromise. In 2012 and 2013, Governor Jan Brewer vetoes a series of bills after telling GOP lawmakers they needed to pass a budget, and Governor Doug Ducey did the same in 2021. This is the second year in a row Hobbs has vowed to veto bills to force Republican legislators to act. Last year, she employed the tactic to spur the passage of emergency funding for programs that serve disabled Arizonans. And that concludes this story. Hobbs to Republicans, show me your budget or every bill you send me is dead. We move on next to a story about elections. Maricopa County Recorder Justin Heap discussed election records litigation with feds. New emails raise questions about whether Heap is coordinating with federal officials as they seek to investigate past elections and obtain voter information in Arizona. By Sasha Hupka of VoteBeat, April 14, 2026. New records show a top Maricopa County official directly corresponded with the U.S. Department of Justice last year about election records and litigation as the department sought to obtain Arizona voter rolls and probe the county's past elections. The emails, obtained by watchdog group American Oversight and shared exclusively with VoteBeat, show Maricopa County Recorder Justin Heap signaling support for the Trump administration's investigation into his own county's elections. The county, home to Phoenix, is a key election battleground. The records also suggest that Heap, a Republican, met with Arizona's top federal prosecutor just before the DOJ informed the county it was looking into its past elections, raising the questions about his level of coordination with federal law enforcement officials. In addition, the documents suggest that the recorder's office withheld records from VoteBeat. In March, VoteBeat filed a public records request for copies of emails between Heap and the DOJ during the time period in question, but his office did not provide them. Under state law, public officials cannot withhold records requests without any basis, and doing so could lead to civil penalties. Liz Hempowitz, Deputy Executive Director of American Oversight, said Heap's engagement with federal law enforcement officials amid the ongoing investigations, along with a recent push by his office to question certain voters' eligibility, should, quote, set off alarm bells. Election officials have a duty to administer elections fairly based on facts and evidence, not to blur the line between election administration and politicized law enforcement, she said. This pattern risks turning baseless suspicion into policy and sweeping eligible voters into investigations they should never be part of. Heap did not respond to a request for comment. Judy Keene, a spokesperson for his office, also did not respond to questions from VoteBeat. Records. Heap voiced support for Department of Justice efforts. In one of the newly revealed messages, Heap said he learned in mid-August 2025 that Maricopa County's Elections and Information Technology staff was planning to delete certain records from the 2020 and 2022 elections. In response, he sent a letter to Maricopa County Manager Jen Pokorsky, raising concerns about the county's email retention policies. Then, the records show Heap's executive assistant coordinating a meeting between Heap and U.S. Attorney Timothy Corchain on August 27th. Around the same time, Assistant U.S. Attorney General for Civil Rights, Harmeet Dhillon, began threatening legal action against Arizona Secretary of State Adrian Fontes, a Democrat, questioning the state's voter registration and list maintenance procedures, and his refusal to share unredacted copies of the state voter roll. Records separately obtained by VoteBeat show that Dhillon had reached out to Fontes on August 12th to warn of litigation. Then, on September 4th, Dhillon sent a letter to the state and Maricopa County instructing them to preserve all election records from 2020 to the present. It has come to our attention that the Maricopa Elections Department and Recorder intend to destroy election records from the 2020 and 2022 federal elections, including staff emails, she wrote, adding that her office had received complaints concerning errors and malfeasance in the conduct of the Maricopa County elections. Please be advised that any attempt to destroy these and any other records will be construed by the Civil Rights Division as evidence of intentional spoliation of evidence, she continued. The next day, Heap wrote back to Dhillon and voiced support for her efforts. Please be assured that my office is committed to full cooperation with the Department of Justice as it conducts its investigation, he wrote. We share your goal of safeguarding election integrity and transparency, and we will continue to work with all relevant stakeholders to ensure that no records are lost, compromised, or destroyed. He added that his predecessor, GOP Recorder Stephen Richer, had transferred control of all election records to the county's Elections and Information Technology departments. Heap has repeatedly lamented that the county's Board of Supervisors usurped his office's power through that agreement with Richer, and he told Dhillon that he no longer was in charge of any documents she might seek from prior elections. However, he noted he was engaged in a legal battle with the supervisors, who have refuted his characterization of the dispute and the agreement to retain control of the documents. That caught the attention of Maureen Reardon, who was then acting chief of the voting section of the DOJ's Civil Rights Division. She emailed Heap to ask him to forward the docket number for the litigation, which remains unresolved. If you can send the court documents and the next court date, that would be really helpful as well, she wrote. Thanks in advance. Heap, Department of Justice continued to scrutinize Maricopa elections. Heap was first elected recorder in 2024 with the support of President Donald Trump's allies, who questioned the integrity of the 2020 election, and he has spent much of his term in office promoting election security, sometimes alongside Trump administration officials. In February, Heap joined then Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem at a hastily arranged press conference to promote federal legislation requiring proof of citizenship to register to vote. Hours after that event, he claimed that his office had identified 137 non-citizens on the county's voter roll via a digital database maintained by the Department of Homeland Security. Experts have long warned that the database, called Systematic Alien Verification for Entitlements, or SAVE, is unreliable. Since then, Heap has said he intends to change the registration status of those voters through a process that several election experts and lawyers call legally dubious. He also formally referred 207 voters to local prosecutors for investigation, significantly more than the 137 people that he previously flagged. Meanwhile, the federal government continues to investigate the 2020 election in Maricopa County, even though several prior reviews have found no evidence of widespread fraud or a stolen presidential race. Last month, the FBI subpoenaed election records from the Arizona Senate, which conducted a controversial review of the county's election results in 2021. Courtine's office issued the subpoena and is overseeing a grand jury impaneled in Phoenix. Homeland Security Investigations, a branch of DHS that typically focuses on transnational narcotics and trafficking investigation, has also been probing past elections in recent months. Records previously obtained by VoteBeat show that the agency asked the Arizona Attorney General's office for records from its 2020 election investigation. In January, the DOJ officially filed its lawsuit against Fontes over the state's voter roll. That case is still pending in federal court. And that concludes this story. Maricopa County Recorder Justin Heap discussed election records litigation with feds. Our next story, appallingly short of basic human dignity. Democrats demand answers about Mesa ICE facility. Three Arizona Democrats sent DHS a list of demands after a surprise oversight visit found the facility operating far beyond its 157-person capacity. By Jared McDonald Evoy, April 10, 2026. After three Democratic members of Congress made a surprise visit to a Mesa Immigration and Customs Enforcement holding facility Thursday night and saw detainees in holding cells, quote, like sardines, the trio are now demanding answers from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. That visit came in the wake of the Arizona Mirror's reporting earlier Thursday, detailing how Arizona Removal Operations Coordination Center, located at Mesa Gateway Airport, has been operating far over its 157-person capacity for most of this year. The Mirror's analysis, in fact, found that one of the few times ICE was detaining fewer people than that was when two of those same Democrats toured the facility during a scheduled oversight visit in February. What we observed constitutes a failure to meet basic detention standards, raises serious legal and humanitarian concerns, and must be addressed immediately. U.S. Representatives Yasemin Ansari, Adelita Grijalva, and Greg Stanton wrote in their letter. 2 days after this story was published, DHS accused Ansari, Grijalva, and Stanton of lying about the conditions at AROCC and defended ICE detention practices. Their claim this facility is overcrowded and horrific are false. ICE has higher detention standards than most U.S. prisons that hold actual U.S. citizens, an unnamed DHS spokesperson said in an emailed statement to the Mirror. The facility, first exclusively reported on by the Mirror, takes up 25,000 square feet in a building located at the Mesa Gateway Airport, where it shares space with the U.S. Forest Service and the Phoenix Interagency Fire Center. The Democrats on Thursday found it was operating far beyond its capacity when they showed up unannounced for an oversight visit. Detainees were packed together tightly, with no access to beds and sleeping on a concrete floor, the letter said. We observed rooms labeled for a capacity of 21 individuals, holding approximately 40 to 50 people, crammed at densities that prevented individuals from sitting, lying down, or moving freely, forcing many to sleep on concrete floors without bedding. The lawmakers said on Thursday night, after their oversight visit, that detainees were held there for 72 hours or more before departing. This also isn't the first time lawmakers have toured the facility. when Democratic U.S. Representatives Greg Stanton and Yasemin Ansari told ICE they would be conducting that oversight visit in February. ICE policy requires they give 7 days' notice before arriving. The number of detainees dropped to some of the lowest numbers the overcrowded facility had seen in 2026, according to the Mirror's analysis of recently released data. We're going to pause here for a moment to remind you that you're listening to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sunsounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Almost immediately after the inspection, those numbers began to climb again, and within days, the facility was once again operating beyond capacity. Given the conditions we noted in this facility, it is particularly appalling that individuals are being held well beyond the facility's intended short-term holding period of less than 12 hours, the letter continued. Holding individuals for multiple days in a facility designed for short-term processing raises serious concerns about systemic misuse of the facility. Detainees are supposed to be at AROCC for no more than 12 hours while they wait to be loaded onto a plane, either so they can be deported or transferred to a different ICE facility. The Mirror's reporting found that publicly available data shows how overcrowded the facility has become this year. The average length of stay in 2026 is about 36 hours, compared to the same time frame in 2025, when the average stay was about 12 hours. And they have a chart here showing the length of stay at AROCC. In 2025, the average daily population was approximately 21 people for the same time frame. So far in 2026, there have been an average of 274 detainees each day. The Mirror found one individual in the data who stayed for 18 days, coinciding with a time when the population of the facility was near its peak of 777 individuals in a single day. The three Democrats also expressed concern over the facility's lack of sufficient toilets, showers, and access to medical care. For example, during our brief visit, detainees identified individuals who were ill and asked us for assistance in obtaining sanitary napkins. We are also deeply concerned about lack of access to drinking water for detainees, which is inhumane and dangerous, particularly during the upcoming summer season, the letter said. The reported presence of visibly ill individuals without adequate isolation or care raises concerns about infectious disease risk within the facility. Ansari, Grijalva, and Stanton said they believe the facility's current conditions may be in violation of ICE's performance-based national detention standards, as well as other federal detention requirements. The letter asked DHS to answer 6 questions. The average maximum length of time at the facility for the last 12 months. Steps ICE is taking to ensure adequate medical care, climate control, and basic hygiene. Steps ICE is taking to quarantine ill individuals. Steps ICE is taking to ensure individuals are not held beyond the intended short-term time frame. How these conditions fit with relevant medical, fire, and safety standards of local, state, and federal statutes. Provide all internal inspections, audits, and incident reports related to the facility in the past 12 months. The lawmakers have asked DHS to respond by April 24th. Congress has a responsibility to ensure that all federal detention facilities operate in a manner consistent with the law and in accordance with basic human dignity, the Democrats wrote. The conditions we observed are appallingly short of that standard and demand immediate remediation. Congress will be returning next week and is expected to debate funding for DHS, with many Democrats drawing a hard line in the sand on any additional funding for ICE. And that concludes this story. Appallingly short of basic human dignity, Democrats demand answers about Mesa ICE facility. And while we were recording this episode, we had an update on one of our earlier stories. Hobbs vetoes first bills under moratorium as Arizona budget standoff drags on. The governor says she'll keep vetoing legislation until Republican leaders publicly release a budget proposal. By Jim Small, April 14, 2026. Governor Katie Hobbs vetoed three bills on Tuesday, following through with the promise she made a day earlier to veto any bill sent to her desk until legislative Republicans publicly release their budget proposal. In her veto letter for all three measures, the governor chided GOP lawmakers for failing to engage in good faith budget negotiations. The legislative majority needs to put forward their budget proposal and then join me at the negotiating table so we can pass a bipartisan, balanced budget like we've done the past 3 years, Hobbs wrote. But until the legislative majority shows us their plans for a balanced budget that works for middle-class Arizonans, their bills will be dead on arrival. The Democratic governor paused budget negotiations 3 weeks ago after she said that the Republicans who control the Arizona House of Representatives and the Arizona Senate refused to negotiate on Proposition 123, a school funding measure that expired last year. In response, Republicans said that Hobbs' proposed budget was unserious and accused her of, quote, throwing a tantrum. The three bills vetoed were House Bill 2033, which would have allowed Arizona schools to require all students complete statewide assessment testing in written form instead of on a computer. House Bill 2093, which would have removed a requirement that health classes in Arizona schools include information on mental health. House Bill 4033, which would have required school districts to include more detailed information about bond proposals in the election informational packet. It is likely that all three bills, which were sent to Hobbs on Monday, would have been vetoed even without the moratorium, as each was backed only by Republicans. Hobbs has consistently rejected legislation that doesn't earn bipartisan support. Passing a budget by the June 30th deadline is the Arizona legislature's only statutory duty each year. Negotiations are always difficult since the budget requires approval from both Republican-led chambers of the legislature as well as the Democratic governor, whose priorities often do not align. Last year, the budget fight led to numerous late-night sessions, partly because of Republican infighting, with the budget finally passed and signed on June 27th. The dynamics of the negotiations this year are even more difficult because of cuts from the federal government that decreased available resources and election year politics that are especially amplified because Hobbs is seeking re-election in November. Hobbs revealed her own budget plan in January, which Republicans said was, quote, based on fantasy revenue. At the center of Hobbs' exit from negotiations was Republicans' refusal to negotiate putting a renewal of Prop 123, which expired last year, to voters. Arizona voters in 2016 narrowly favored Prop 123, a vital source of K-12 school funding that made up for the state's failure to increase funding for public education to keep up with inflation. Its passage settled a lawsuit filed by public schools. The $300 million in funding came from an increase in the percentage taken from the state's land trust to fund public schools, raising the distribution rate from 2.5% to 6.9%. The rate reverted back to the lower threshold in June. Republicans have tried for the past few years to create a plan to renew or revive Prop 123, but none of those efforts gained traction. And while they agreed to use the state's general fund to backfill the lost $300 million in education funding last year, there's no guarantee they'll continue to do so. When Hobbs walked away from budget negotiations 3 weeks ago, gubernatorial spokesman Christian Slater blamed Republicans' refusal to negotiate a Prop 123 revival on Senator Jake Hoffman, a Queen Creek Republican and head of the far-right Arizona Freedom Caucus. Rumors at the Capitol suggest that some Republicans may be tempted to cut a deal with Hobbs on Prop 123, Hoffman wrote in a March 12 post on the social media site X. The only winner in a political drug deal like this is Hobbs. If Republicans decide to surrender on 123, they will be effectively underwriting the Hobbs re-election campaign. Republicans have claimed that Hobbs' own budget proposal is unbalanced because it relies on funding sources that might not materialize. That includes Prop 123 funding that would depend on approval from voters in November, and a $760 million reimbursement from the federal government for border security-related expenditures made by the state after January 20, 2021. Both Hobbs and Republican legislative leaders have requested more than $700 million from the State Border Security Reinforcement Fund, created by the One Big Beautiful Bill. But there's no guarantee Arizona will receive that money, as the state must compete for funds with other border states like Texas, which has asked for more than $11 billion in reimbursements from the $13 billion fund. Senate President Warren Peterson said Monday that the state Senate will respond accordingly to the governor's bill moratorium. "We're not going to pretend business as usual can continue under a veto threat," he said. In recent years, Arizona governors have resorted to bill-signing moratoriums as a way to strong-arm Republican legislators to compromise. In 2012 and 2013, Governor Jan Brewer vetoed a series of bills after telling GOP lawmakers they needed to pass a budget, and Governor Doug Ducey did the same in 2021. This is the second year in a row Hobbs has vowed to veto bills to force Republican legislators to act. Last year, she employed the tactic to spur passage of emergency funding for programs that served disabled Arizonans. And that concludes this story update. Hobbs vetoes first bills under moratorium as Arizona budget standoff drags on. Our next story, she sold MAGA merch. Now she's running for governor as a Green Party candidate. Risa Lombardo was a Republican Party official until days before she filed to run, and the Green Party says she's a sham candidate. By Caitlin Sievers, April 15, 2026. Risa Lombardo was a Republican precinct committeeman until days before she filed a statement of interest to run for Arizona governor as a Green Party candidate in 2026. In 2023, Lombardo was hawking, quote, "carry one" buttons and supporting far-right Republican campaigns alongside her husband, Michael Lombardo, who remains a Republican precinct committeeman for Legislative District 2. The Arizona Green Party says Risa Lombardo's candidacy is a sham. In an email to the Arizona Mirror, Lombardo claimed that her candidacy is genuine and that, while Mike Lombardo, who she said was her ex-husband, is a Republican, she was a Democrat for most of her life. Maricopa County voter registration records show that Risa Lombardo was a registered Democrat from 2006 through 2016 and voted in the Republican primaries in 2022 and 2024 before registering with the Green Party in 2025. The Green Party is no stranger to Republicans co-opting its name to run candidates aimed at siphoning votes away from Democrats in tight races. The tactic doesn't always work, but in 2008, Democratic State Representative Jackie Thrasher said she believed a Green Party candidate who received donations from her Republican opponents' cost led to her losing a re-election bid. And in 2010, a former Republican legislator recruited unhoused people and street performers to run as Green Party candidates, admitting that those candidates might take votes that otherwise would have gone to Democrats. As of January, about 36% of Arizona voters were registered as Republicans, 28% registered as Democrats, and 34% were unaffiliated. Democrats need those unaffiliated voters to win, and any third-party candidate who takes votes that otherwise would have gone to Democrats could make or break a campaign. Lombardo was elected as a Republican precinct committeeman for Legislative District 2 in July 2024, alongside Mike Lombardo, according to records from Maricopa County. She served as a precinct committeeman, a position that is typically held by people who are highly involved in partisan politics, from October 2024 until at least February 28, 2025. She filed a statement of interest to run for governor as a Green Party candidate on March 5, 2025. In Maricopa County's next monthly report on March 31, 2025, Risa Lombardo was no longer listed as a Republican precinct committeeman. When they filed to run for precinct committeeman in March 2024, both Lombardos listed the same residential address in the same lot of a North Phoenix mobile home park. The Mirror could not find any records in Maricopa County showing that the couple had divorced, and Risa Lombardo did not respond to follow-up questions on her sudden switch from Republican to Green Party, or details about where and when her divorce took place. In her candidate financial disclosure form, filed February 26th, Risa Lombardo checked N.A. in response to a question about whether her spouse is a member of her household, indicating that she was either unmarried or widowed. The Arizona Green Party declined to comment, but has made social media posts warning voters that it views Lombardo as an illegitimate Green Party candidate. As of December 2025, the party posted that it had no affiliation with and had never even heard of Lombardo, gubernatorial candidate Lisa Castillo, or Secretary of State hopeful Dwayne Collier, who are all running in 2026 under the Green Party name. Thank you for challenging Risa Lombardo's signatures, the Arizona Green Party wrote in a post on X in response to independent candidate for governor Terry Ann Hourihan's legal challenge to Lombardo's candidacy. She's a Republican trying to hijack our ballot line. She's a sham candidate. Beyond serving as a precinct committeeman, campaign finance reports show that the Legislative District 2 Republican Committee paid Lombardo $404 in 2025 for postage to send certified letters to precinct committeemen. Michael Lombardo is a member of the Maricopa County Republican Committee's, quote, ultra grassroots team, whose website describes him as a dedicated Republican activist focused on grassroots organizing, election integrity, and party engagement. Michael Lombardo got into politics during the sham, quote, audit of the 2020 presidential election in Maricopa County. Feeling that his vote was undermined, he volunteered for double shifts during the audit, according to his biography. Since 2023, he has assisted in running local, county, state, and national delegate elections for the Republican Party, the online biography says. Together, Michael and Risa Lombardo supported the 2024 campaign of far-right Republican Josh Barnett, an avid conspiracy theorist and election denier who has unsuccessfully run for office in Arizona three times since 2020. Barnett, a QAnon follower, lost bids for Congress in 2020 and 2022. The Lombardos both donated to his failed campaign for Arizona Senate in 2024, and Barnett thanked both of them for their help in a Facebook post. Lombardo told the Mirror on Tuesday that her candidacy was sincere and that she switched to the Green Party because its platform best reflects her principles. On its website, the Arizona Green Party says it supports phasing out the use of fossil fuels and replacing them with renewable energy, a transition to an eco-socialist economy, eliminating poverty, ending police brutality and mass incarceration, shrinking the military-industrial complex, and promoting free and fair elections. Many of those goals are a far cry from the ones Barnett set out in his campaign and that Risa Lombardo supported 2 years ago. While Barnett's campaign was based on election integrity, he promoted a plan to automatically dedicate Arizona's Electoral College votes to Trump in 2024, regardless of the election results, a notion that even some of his allies found to be antithetical to election integrity. Barnett isn't the only far-right candidate that Risa Lombardo has supported. In 2023, she registered the business T3 Designs at the same home address listed in her campaign finance reports and candidate paperwork. In the business's Instagram posts that year, Lombardo featured photos of buttons for sale that read, quote, Trump won, and, quote, Kerry won, referring to Trump's presidential campaign loss in 2020 and his ally Kerry Lake's loss in the Arizona governor's race in 2022. Lombardo also sold merchandise promoting far-right Republican Anthony Kern's 2024 bid for Congress and a shirt bearing the GOP elephant with the letters FJB underneath, short for F Joe Biden. Neither Trump nor Lake are fans of clean energy, with Trump working to dismantle the Environmental Protection Agency and to open up protected lands to mining and drilling. Both Lake and Trump have used the refrain, drill baby drill, to describe their enthusiasm for fossil fuels. Lombardo said that during her run for governor, she'll be focused on equal opportunity for everyone based on merit, fair and transparent elections that reflect the will of the voters, a responsible environmental plan to protect Arizona's air and water, and meaningful changes to the way the state handles education, homelessness, and the prison system. You can find those in our Green Party platform, and you'll hear a lot about them from me on the campaign trail, she said. Lombardo is one of many candidates facing a challenge from Democratic activist Craig Beckman, who says she didn't collect enough valid voter signatures to make it on the ballot. In Hourihan's challenge to Lombardo's candidacy, which was dismissed April 13th, Lombardo was represented in court by Republican election attorneys Tim Lasota and Corey Langhofer. Beckman claimed that Lombardo failed to obtain the 1,771 signatures needed to make it onto the ballot as a Green Party candidate, because many of the 3,250 signatures she submitted were invalid. Beckman said that several of the people who gathered signatures on Lombardo's behalf listed residential addresses where they didn't actually live. He claimed that he confirmed this by sending private investigators to the addresses listed on the petition sheets to speak with the people who actually live there. Some of the residents said they didn't know the petition circulators, and one of the homes appeared to be abandoned. He also claimed that multiple signature gatherers for Lombardo were not eligible for the job because they had felony convictions on their record, making them ineligible to register to vote in Arizona if they haven't petitioned to have their rights restored. Because signature gatherers are required to list their residential addresses and be eligible to register to vote in Arizona, Beckman argued that all of the signatures gathered by those who listed incorrect addresses and who have felony convictions should be thrown out. And that concludes this story. She sold MAGA merch. Now she's running for governor as a Green Party candidate. And finally, Gallego pulls endorsement days after defending California representative accused of sexual assault by Caitlin Seavers, April 10, 2026. U.S. Senator Ruben Gallego, a Democrat from Arizona, pulled his endorsement of California gubernatorial hopeful Eric Swalwell on Friday following reporting that an ex-staffer accused the congressman of sexual assault. Gallegos' change of heart came days after he took to social media to defend Swalwell against those allegations. Swalwell is one of Gallegos' closest friends in Congress. Gallego was just one of a slew of people who quickly fled from Swalwell on Friday after the San Francisco Chronicle reported that Swalwell assaulted the woman twice when she was too drunk to consent. Several staffers left the campaign shortly before the report was published. "What is described is indefensible," Gallego said in a Friday afternoon statement. "Women who come forward with accounts like this deserve to be heard with respect, not questioned or dismissed. I regret having come to his defense on social media prior to knowing all the information. I am equally as shocked and upset about what has transpired." Just 3 days earlier, on April 7th, Gallego replied to a social media account that had claimed multiple women accused Swalwell of sexual misconduct, implying that the poster wasn't trustworthy. "This person started posting for the first time 3 days ago," Gallego wrote. In another post the same day, Gallego exhibited his continued support for Swalwell. "When you are first in the race is when they target you," he wrote. "Eric is a fighter, and he will win the governor's race." Gallego is one of many Democrats being floated as a possible presidential candidate in 2028. His appeal comes from his background as a Marine from a working-class family who has won elections in the historically red-leaning Grand Canyon state. Most recently, he defeated MAGA candidate Kerry Lake to take one of Arizona's Senate seats in 2024. Earlier this week, Gallego said that he's leaving the door open to a possible presidential run. But Swalwell isn't Gallego's only questionable endorsement this election cycle. Gallego also endorsed Graham Platner to represent the Democratic Party in the Senate in Maine, despite the first-time candidate's multiple links to anti-Semitism, including a tattoo that resembled a symbol used during Hitler's regime. In late February, Platner reposted social media content from neo-Nazi influencer Stu Peters, whose online talk show regularly includes anti-Semitic tropes. After that, reporters found that in January, Platner had been a guest on a popular YouTube show whose host has spread anti-Semitic claims about Jews and Israel. Gallego's endorsement came after Platner's ties to anti-Semitism, as well as racist and homophobic comments he made on Reddit, were made public, drawing criticism from both supporters and foes. The senator's initial support for Swalwell, despite the sexual assault allegations, also drew swift criticism from Republicans and Democrats. And we're going to have to leave it there because that's all the time we have for this week's edition of the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. If you missed any part of this program or want to hear a story again, you can go to our website, sunsounds.org, and click on Demand Podcasts. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Stay tuned for more great programming from Sun Sounds of Arizona.